This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Would you like to do a screen test?
Yeah.
You would?
Yeah, I would.
Really? Could we do one now?
That's Jared Harris as Andy Warhol and Lily Taylor as Valerie Solanas in a scene from the 1996 film I Shot Andy Warhol. It's the film that made many of us realize how good an actor Harris is. Further proof came with the film Happiness, in which he played a Russian cab driver who was a seducer and thief. The cast of Happiness won the 1999 National Board of Review Acting Ensemble Award. Harris played John Lennon in last year's VH1 movie, Two of Us. His other films include Lost in Space, Dead Man, Smoke, Blue in the Face, and Natural Born Killers. He grew up in an acting family. His father is Richard Harris, his stepfather Rex Harrison. In the new film Shadow Magic, Jared Harris stars as Raymond Wallace, a Westerner who introduces silent movies to China in 1902. It's based on historical accounts of the period. Here's a scene from the beginning of the film in which Wallace has shown up at a busy photography studio in Beijing and interrupts everyone's work to announce his arrival and the arrival of a new magical technology.
My name is Raymond Wallace. Raymond Wallace. Ni hao.
Ni xiang gan shenme?
My business. Yi yang, the same. Wo de gong hao. Better. Wo de zhao pian. My pictures. Nung dong. They move. Mingbai? Xin Fa Ming. Living photographs that move. It's a worldwide phenomenon. Picture.
Hello.
You speak English.
Hello.
Speak English.
Speak Chinese better.
Yeah. He understands.
Jared Harris, welcome to Fresh Air. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your character in Shadow Magic?
The character in Shadow Magic is based on about five or six real people. The Western governments at the turn of the century sent representatives out there, salesmen essentially out there, to corner the market in cinema in China. And they pretty much all across the board all went out there with very little knowledge of China, very no Chinese skills and language and in understanding the customs, all failed miserably. Most of them crawled back home broke. And this character goes out there really to make money. He's a merchant. He's failed at home, his wife has left him, and his fantasy is that he goes out to China, makes a killing, comes back home with lots and lots of money and status, and that his wife will see what a success he is and crawl back and beg to be taken back. You know, some sort of stupid fantasy like this, which of course he doesn't achieve at all. Instead, he through his association with this character, played by Xia Yu, who's a photographer's assistant, who is an artist himself, He learns how to use this new medium as a sort of modes of expression, and then he gets banished from China and bequeathed the equipment to Xia Yu's character, who ends up making the first Chinese movie, which is historical. This person in real life did make the first Chinese movie back in 1902.
How did you get this part?
Someone, I don't know who, pulled out at the last minute. As is often the case in with movies. And so I got the script and was told, a script is arriving, you have to read it tonight. Tomorrow, if you're interested, the director will call you up, and if the phone call goes well and you're interested and she's interested, then you're going to get on a plane at the end of the week and head out to China.
And did you ever feel like, well, if they really wanted me, they should have called me the first time around?
No, but not at all. The people that they're talking to, they kind of work their way down a list of a mixture. It's not necessarily to do with ability. It's to do with, they're very good people on the list. It's as much to do with fame, you know, as it is to do with ability. So yeah, that's just part of the business side of making movies, is you've got to have a name up there that has marquee value, you know? And you can get marquee value in many different ways.
Does your name have marquee value?
Well, it had some, but there were a lot of other people on top of me on that list. They said it would have come to me first.
The movie that I think you first became really known for was I Shot Andy Warhol in 1996. And this movie is about Valerie Solanas, who wrote the Scum Manifesto and actually shot Andy Warhol, seriously wounding him and nearly killing him. Lily Taylor played Valerie Solanas. You played Andy Warhol. How did you get the part?
I auditioned. I knew it was a part that they would cast an English-speaking actor, an English actor for. Generally, when you're over here, if you're English, you tend to get the parts that, this just sounds a bit silly, not that nobody wants, but, you get the kind of odd parts, the character parts, or the sort of, the villain parts. So I knew this was an American role, which was an important thing for a foreign actor working this country to get, is to try and get your first American roles, So, I was all gung-ho to try and land this part and played some little mind games to get it.
What did you do for the audition?
I went in and met them first, and I had a beard and everything, and I deliberately tried to look as unlike the guy as I could, and then said I'd like to come in. But don't ask me to come back in 2 days' time or 3 days' time. I said, give me 2 weeks or 3 weeks to really focus on this and try and get it right, and you'll have an idea of how close I can get. And if you've got any material, the tapes and stuff like that, I'd love to get that, because that'll give me a cut short my that process. So, which is what I did. I studied for a couple of weeks, and I came into the audition, and I thought it would be too weird if I sat down talking as I do now and then suddenly put on this persona. So I went in and did the whole thing as Andy. And then I thought, well, he would do something to try and flip the tables on these people, because he didn't like to be put on... he liked to be in the spotlight, but not having it pointing at him. He liked to be pointing the spotlight. So I was trying to figure out how to turn the tables, and I got hold of a little video camera and made a movie of them auditioning me.
Now, you play Andy Warhol as if he's pretty disconnected from his body, and almost as if his body doesn't have much weight or energy.
I thought that's true, looking at the photos of him and seeing him move around. I think he'd become pretty disappointed in his sexual experiences, and I think he hated the way he looked, and he hated his body. He didn't like the way it looked. As before he got shot, I think he's deteriorated greatly after he got shot. And I also noticed that in all of his pictures, he always covered up his crotch.
Huh.
You always see him the way he stands. He's always sort of covering it up.
Gee, what did that mean to you?
I think that he was uncomfortable and was disappointed in the act of sex, and was in some way disappointed in his physical being,
Well, that disappointment in the act of sex comes up in the scene that I want to play here. And this is a scene that takes place at one of Andy Warhol's party, and everyone at the party is in a kind of druggy trance, or they're dancing. And Warhol is the outsider, even at his own party. He's just watching everyone else. And in this scene, he and Valerie Solanas are sitting next to each other on a couch. Here's the scene.
Hi.
Gee, everyone's having such a good time. Would you say something for me?
What?
Yeah, I have like an hour's worth on tape here, and I was just wondering, maybe you could just do a monologue for me.
No, I can't just monologue like that. I need a stimulating person like yourself, to talk to. I can just do it on my own.
Oh, come on, Valerie. Say something dirty. That's so easy for you. Let's talk about sex. Sex is really nothing, isn't it?
I could read you something from my latest masterpiece, Scum Manifesto.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Sex is the refuge of the mindless. Sex is not part of a relationship. On the contrary, it is a solitary experience, non-creative. A gross waste of time.
Oh, so true.
I think this scene has what you were talking about when he says that he thinks that sex is really nothing. Mm. Tell me about the vocal inflections that you used as Warhol. That kind of
you
flatness.
Mean the accent.
Well, not the flatness, not the accent so much as the kind of flatness with which he speaks.
Well, I listened to a lot of audio tapes, and then luckily the first day of filming that I was there, Billy Naim was on set. And he gave me a whole bunch of clues about how to do that, his particular rhythms and patterns. But when he was in public, he had a public and a private persona, definitely. And he played Andy Warhol in public. And it was this very blank, flat, non-responsive almost like a white screen for people to project onto. But when he was in private, he was very chatty and a big gossip. So I tried to distinguish between those scenes where he was in public and in private. And that was a scene where he was in public. He was talking to a stranger, you know, and he was in this big, big party scene. But the other scenes in the movie where he has this sort of breathless quality where he can't decide which sentence he wants to start first, and he starts about three of them, and he gets all, you know, he jumbles all this stuff on. And so I try to get both of those on, although the movie mostly dealt with his public persona.
What else did Billy Naim tell you?
He said he wished that we would leave the factory there for him to live in. The set that we had there, because it was exactly like it, and it was the best days of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, they were crazy, crazy, crazy days. Our version of it naturally was much was a kind of PG version of it. He said you were constantly finding people having sex in the bathroom, or having sex outside on the couch in the middle of you know, with people walking by. So he said it was wild, people doing drugs and everything, and, you know, right out in the open.
After playing Andy Warhol, did you feel any more strongly about his art or his movies?
Yeah, I did. I definitely did. He was a very successful commercial artist, making a lot of money. And he abandoned that career to become a fine artist. And that's a really difficult thing for somebody to do. In the middle of their life, if you like, although it was early in his, but still, once you've achieved success in a career, to abandon it and become an artist and, you know, risk abject failure and poverty, that's a huge risk to take.
My guest is actor Jared Harris. His films include I Shot Andy Warhol, Happiness, Smoke, and Dead Man. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Jared Harris is my guest, and his new movie is called Shadow Magic. Now, you had a great role in the movie Happiness, which was directed by Todd Solondz. You played a Russian cab driver who's a little like the Dan Aykroyd, Steve Martin, Wild and Crazy guys from Saturday Night Live. Do you want to describe him?
He is a conscience-free... Russian immigrant, comes to this country, presently driving a cab, can barely speak English, opportunist, absolute 100% opportunist, who gets involved with Jane Addams' character, his teacher, his English teacher, and takes her for as much as he can.
Let's hear a scene in which he's using his cab to drive Jane Addams, his English teacher, home. And she's, by the way, now a regular on Frasier. So he's pulled up in front of her door. And before she gets out, he starts putting the move on her.
Why are you not married?
Oh, Vlad, life is so different in America. Here, a woman can... I know this is difficult to understand, but... a woman can fulfill her potential. There are opportunities to do something, do good, really improve the world.
Do you like men?
Yes, It's not so simple.
Are you lesbian?
No.
It's all right if you are lesbian. I like lesbian.
This character of the Russian cab driver is really the opposite of Warhol physically. You know, where Warhol lives outside of his body and thinks that sex isn't what it's cracked up to be, this cab driver sees himself as macho and swarthy and the great seducer. Talk about the body language you got for this character.
There's a great, you got it. There's a kind of an arrogance, a great sense of pride, possession of space, a domination of his surroundings. Great fun. And like I said before, I think what distinguished him from every other character in that movie is he had no conscience whatsoever. I read an interesting statistic when I was studying for this character, which is that they did a study of first, second, and third generation families when families immigrate. People immigrate to this country, and the finding was that the longer you are in America, the more mental health problems you develop. And this guy hadn't been here long enough to be tortured by, guilt and conscience, and he's doing the right thing or the wrong thing. I mean, he took a little bit, obviously, too far. He was a thief. But I enjoyed the idea that we have all these other people are tripping up all over themselves, over their desires, which they can't own up to. So it ends up, everyone is referred to in that film through sex, through their drive for sex or their ambition for love. And because they can't express it, it twists and contorts their personality, and they end up, exhibiting deviant behavior and going about it in very strange ways, and some of them completely abhorrent ways. So the Dylan Baker character, but this guy, he wasn't messed up about it, you know.
He just messed up other people.
Yes, exactly.
Who did you observe for this character? There's something so recognizable about him.
I live in the East Village, right in the thick of this Ukrainian neighborhood. So there's I used to go hang out in the Ukrainian bars and stuff like that and watch people. So there was no one specific person.
In the scene that we just played, you're wearing the shiny, clingy polyester shirt that's coming out of your pants. Who dressed you?
I forget. Sorry, I forgot the costume designer's name.
But it was the costume designer. You didn't go to the store and find it yourself.
No. We consulted on it, but yeah, it was the costume designer. When I went in to audition for that part, I wore a really big, loud shirt. You see that in the neighborhood. You see, particularly on Sundays in good weather, what you see is a family. You'll see the husband, the wife, and the daughter. That's who I particularly sticks in my mind right now. The wife was dressed in furs. The daughter would be dressed in sort of hip Tommy Hilfiger clothes, and would either be walking 5 yards ahead or 5 yards behind her parents, completely disgusted with them. And the husband would be in bright, shiny tracksuit top and tracksuit bottom. You know, like a gangster or something, you know, this sort of idea of a gangster. I thought this guy had seen, he'd come over from Russia and he'd seen all these, in Russia, he'd seen all these 70s American TV shows. And that he had this idea that's what America was like. He was kind of he was like a character on Starsky and Hutch or something, you know. So he had this idea in his mind of that's where he was living.
I love your description of the family each making their own statement through their clothing, and each of the statements is totally contradictory with the rest of the family.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, I think of you as being a real chameleon in some of your movies, and I think it's great for you as an actor. I think the only problem would be that people don't necessarily recognize you from role to role, and therefore it might be a little harder to build up a reputation for being Jared Harris.
Ding, 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 ding.
That's been a problem.
Absolutely. Good for the craft, crap for the career. It is. In this country, a good actor is confused with a famous actor.
Right.
You know? So Yeah, that's made it a longer journey.
Jared Harris will be back in the second half of the show. He stars in the new movie Shadow Magic as the Westerner who introduces silent movies to China in 1902. It opens in New York and Los Angeles April 6th, and then will begin opening in other cities. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with actor Jared Harris. He stars in the new independent film Shadow Magic, which opens next month. His other films include I Shot Andy Warhol, Happiness, and Lost in Space. Harris is the stepson of actor Rex Harrison and the son of actor Richard Harris. Richard Harris is known not just for his movies, but for his fluky 1968 hit record.
For us, girl, it ran one step ahead as we followed in the dance. Between the parted pages and we're pressed in love's hot fevered iron like a striped pair of pants. This park is melting in the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down. Someone left the cake out in the rain. I don't think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it, and I'll never have that recipe again.
This recording was made at the height of the hippie era. It's a song that people really love to make fun of, in part because of that kind of inane and bombastic lyric about someone leaving the cake out in the rain. Have you ever figured out what that means, by the way?
I knew you were going to say, what does it mean? What does it mean? It's a metaphor for a relationship.
Oh, okay. What did you think of the record when it came out, and what was happening in your life that year, 1968?
I was enduring my first year in a prisoner of war camp that was a private school called Lady Cross.
It was like a high school?
Yeah, it was a boarding school.
So everybody in the school must have known this. Did this help or hurt your reputation?
Did they know? I remember seeing him on Top of the Pops singing My Boy, but not that one.
Well, I guess it wasn't that big in England, huh?
No, it was, but it wasn't. I was at a boarding school. You know, you didn't have radios. You weren't allowed to watch television. You didn't have access where would you hear it? You didn't have little record players or CDs or anything like that.
Well, when you saw your father and your stepfather acting, was it acting or the actor's life that you found appealing?
I wasn't aware of my dad being an actor when I was young. There was an Australian children's entertainer on television called Rolf Harris. And when I'd say my father was an actor, the kids would say, you know, oh, is he Rolf Harris? I'd say no, and then they would lose interest. So I was disappointed he wasn't Rolf Harris for a long time. But I wasn't aware of him as an actor. I had the benefit of both his success and my stepfather's success in being privileged to go and see a lot of the world when I was very young, you know. So that rubbed off, a taste for that rubbed off, definitely.
What were the Richard Harris and Rex Harrison movies that made the biggest impression on you when you were young?
Um, I remember seeing Camelot. I do remember seeing Camelot and a film called The Snow Goose.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was those are the first films he made that kids could go and see. My father mostly was in mature themed movies. Rex, I remember seeing him in Cleopatra. He played Caesar opposite.
That must have been fun.
Elizabeth Taylor. Yeah, I loved Cleopatra. Was great fun with all these battles and everything.
When you started acting, did you feel that there was anything you had to live up to from your father and stepfather's reputation, or that you would be compared to them in any way?
Well, obviously compared myself. It was important to me to establish myself on my own terms. I had opportunities to act with him very early on. In the movie The Field, they had trouble finding somebody, and I was talking to the director about playing his son in The Field, and he was leery of it, and so was I. And I it was important to me for me to be established and recognized on my own right before I went and went down that route, tried to coattail, I didn't want to do that. Otherwise, I wanted to fail on my own terms. If I was used, you don't know if you got everybody has to think that they've got something special to get into this, because the chances of succeeding are so slim. If I had nothing special and I was going to fail, then I wanted to do it on my own terms and rather than sort of be fooled,
Was there anything that you'd seen in your father or stepfather's careers that either influenced you or convinced you to do it differently?
Well, Rex had, and my father still has, incredibly successful, varied careers. So I'd be thrilled if I could get mine up to that kind of a level. I think the lesson that I remind myself is it's not giving up. They didn't want Rex Harrison to play the part of Henry Higgins in My Fair Lady when they were going to make the movie. They didn't want him for it. He'd played it on Broadway and he'd played it in the West End, but he wasn't a movie star. And so they were going to get somebody else. And they, of course, were campaigning for him to play this part. And so they demanded that he audition for it and send a photograph of himself in, And they were trying to, they put him through some fairly humiliating, or attempted to put him through some humiliating hoops to get this part. And he sent a photo of himself straddling over one of those little fountain, those boys that piss into a fountain, And he sent that in as his picture. They didn't want my father for the role in Camelot either, to play King Arthur. They wanted Richard Burton, and when he turned it down, they were going elsewhere, and he campaigned like hell to get that part. I mean, even to the point of tracking down Jack Warner in some party out in Palm Springs to convince him to give him a shot at this role, So those are the things that I remember. When you see something that you know you're right for, go after it, not to give up while you still have the desire and the ambition,
Well, you really got your start, I think, in independent films, and you're still making a lot of independent films.
Sure.
Is that because it's the sensibility or the group of people that you gravitate to, or has it just been easier to get good parts in those films?
I tell you, I was out in L.A. in 1993, and in 1 week, I went up for a serial killer, the ghost of a serial killer, and a computer-generated serial killer. And at that point, I just said, I've had enough. And I wanted to... I was fed up with the opportunities that were available to me out there. It was kind of like having a racehorse and then just have him trot around on some sort of country fair, on a small padded circle or something. And I wanted I'd been trained and I wanted to stretch and see what I could do, you know? And it seemed to me that those opportunities were going to be in theatre and independent movies. So I made a point of coming back to New York, finding a place with really cheap rent so that if I was doing a play for $200 a week, I could pay my rent. And concentrating on that and hoping that I'd get I'd be in movies that would break through and that would allow me to do more interesting roles in bigger and, well, more better paid movies, you know? So, and in general, I just find the material is more interesting. They take better, they used to. It's getting harder and harder now for independents to do this, but the material used to be riskier and they would try stuff that you just, in a studio movie, often you, by page 10, you know exactly what's going to happen. You know who the good guy and the bad guy is. And the bad guy's unlike anyone you've ever sort of seen because they're just, for no, they're randomly, you know, vicious and unkind. For some reason, they feel compelled to get on the phone and tell the bad guy, the good guy, that they're actually alike one another and they're really brothers in spirit. At the same time, he's trying to rough up his girlfriend or something because, you know, it's all this stupid manipulation of the audience to make you like one character and hate another character so when they decapitate them at the end of the movie you can cheer. And that's my spiel on Hollywood movies.
Okay. Jared Harris, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Is that the end?
Yes, it is.
I've enjoyed it. Time just flew by.
Jared Harris stars in the new independent film Shadow Magic. It opens in New York and Los Angeles April 6th and then will begin opening in other cities. This is Fresh Air.